open up the champagne. Pop. It's my house, come on, turn it up.
Hear a knock on the door and the night begins. Cause we've done this before, so you come on in. Make yourself at my home, tell me where.
Coming to you live from Browns headquarters in Berea, Ohio, this is Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Hello there, and welcome to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, Jason Gibbs with you on a Monday. Rookie minicamp is in the books. OTAs begin tomorrow for this team. One piece of business to talk about quickly before we get into the general topics. The Browns have signed Eric Patterson, defensive back, who was a tryout participant at the rookie minicamp. He is 5'10", 200 pounds, originally signed by the Patriots as an undrafted free agent last year out of Ball State. He will compete with his team going into OTAs. The Browns are now at the 90-person roster maximum.
And I think that's awesome. And that's exactly why you invite those guys.
Yep.
The guy showed flashes of being able to play at this level in the National Football League. He has a little track record, you know, spending times with a couple teams, you know, playing on the practice squad. So he's probably a developmental guy, but you bring a guy like this in who's cheap, just like your undrafted free agents, low risk, and you say, can this guy with, what, 8 games on a practice squad and 3 active games in the NFL as a second-year player overtake or beat out one of my undrafted free agents to maybe make the practice squad again?
Yeah, this is a guy.
That's exactly what it's for. And I mean, I'm proud of him. Good for him.
Good for him. He came in again as a tryout guy and made it, got the offer. And now he will be there when the team opens up OTAs tomorrow. So what the Browns are going to do, they're going to have 9 OTAs. They're going to go Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday for the next 3 weeks. And then the fourth week, it'll finish up with the mandatory mini camp before they take their break, headed out into training camp. I do want to touch on one thing right now because it's getting to the point where it's starting to get laughable to me. And that's to talk about Corey Coleman. Corey Coleman participated in every single day of minicamp. I saw him take all of the reps. When they say he's not in shape, what that means is he's not in Cleveland Browns shape. And this is a guy who's a first-round pick, so he's been doing the circuit. He's been doing the whole drafting. He came in. He was able to take every rep. He didn't miss reps, but he needs to be in better shape. And when you look at the veterans, what did every veteran we talked to in here say their one piece of advice to the rookies would be?
Come in shape.
Get in shape. And they even said, look, they're not going to be able to get in the right kind of shape until they get here, because what we've got going on with this strength and conditioning program is out of control, and in a good way. And that, you know, they've had 6 weeks in the offseason program to get their bodies in shape before these college kids come in.
There's a few layers to this. I think I consistently talk about it. There's being a pro is being in shape. Corey Coleman's a professional for the first time in his life.
Yep.
Okay. And what he thought was good enough to be in Baylor shape to run that offense is not NFL shape, and in some cases not Hugh Jackson wide receiver shape. And
yes,
those two might be different qualifications as well. And I think I remember being out of shape. And that's part of rookie minicamp. It's a litmus test that the coaches put you through mentally and physically to see exactly where you're at, so then they can focus on alleviating that as soon as possible and finding exactly where you fit offensively or defensively. So to go back and say out of shape, what that means, and you talked about it, Corey Coleman didn't miss a rep. It was maybe his third rep. If they were going, some teams go threes or some teams go fours, is on his third rep, he was going at 80% as opposed to Hugh Jackson wanting him at 100%.
Yep.
That's all this is. And if we're going hurry up offense, trying to win a football game, Corey Coleman has to go 100% all the way down into the red zone to get that score in a football game. And that's what Hugh Jackson's expectation was.
Yeah.
And in some cases, every rookie has some hurdle to overcome coming in. And I'm sure if we had Hugh Jackson in here today, it was in a personal setting, he probably wouldn't share this, but these guys came in shape. But these guys struggled grasping, you know, the offense or the defense and taking it to the field. And that's where our focus is. He talked about Corey Coleman and raved about he has all the skills that we thought he has. He does some spectacular things, but needs to get in shape. All that means is when Corey Coleman runs routes, he needs to go 100 miles an hour and come back and do it again until then he taps his helmet and someone else comes in.
And I think the feeling is, again, that all of these guys may be in shape, but it's not Cleveland Browns shape, and they're going to get there. So this is, in many ways, much ado about nothing. If you were at FanFest, you saw him out there make a nice toe-tapping grab on the sideline and certainly look very much the part of the guy that the Browns drafted 15th overall in 2016. So, again, not much to worry about there, but they'll be getting there and getting into shape and getting ready to go and compete, because that's what they're going to have to do beginning on Tuesday.
Absolutely. And even if Corey Coleman should play the role for this offense, as we all think he should, being drafted 15th overall in the first round, he's going to be getting a lot of reps.
Yep.
Well beyond just running gassers or conditioning outside of football, him partaking in a heavy portion of practice as a potential starter, running the route, he will naturally, in a matter of days, and we could probably ask him that by Friday, do you feel like or ask Hugh Jackson that, is he in better shape after three OTAs than he was at this rookie minicamp? And the answer will just be obviously yes. And that's something that you can't replicate. And I know we've talked about it time and time again, is what the practice tempo is and running routes in practice. There's a step up from practice that you can't replicate, and that's playing the games. And that only comes the first game. Every team's a little sluggish, no matter how in shape their coach or strength staff thinks they're in. That first quarter of the first game, whether you're on the road or you're at home, you're gassed because your body's being stressed on an entirely different level.
And how different is it? You know, you can do treadmill and you could do all that stuff to be in shape and do your cardio, etc. But there's a big difference between that and football shape.
There is, absolutely. And that's where I said Corey Coleman is naturally, by being here and taking the practice reps that he's given, which I think should be significant because of the role that he'll play in this offense and where he was drafted, he will naturally get into football shape. So he may, as many players do, stay after practice, run some gassers. Those aren't 100 miles an hour. That's topping you off. That's putting in work. Some guys do it just to be seen. Hey, coach, look at me. I'm running gassers, you know. But Corey getting the reps and executing what he's supposed to do, and Al Saunders barking up his butt after every rep and walking him back to the huddle and ushering him back to the huddle to take that next rep, it's all part of it. He's conditioning his mind with the coaching he's receiving from Al Saunders and the criticism from Hugh Jackson, and the reps that he's getting are conditioning his body.
And it's funny when people, I've read some tweets where people are like, great, so we have another lazy, overweight, the guy is not, there isn't an ounce of fat on this guy's body. I mean, you look at him, it was just shape. And the funny thing is, on Thursday, which was the day, or Friday, I'm sorry, the first day when Hugh made those comments at the podium, which, first of all, I like the fact that he's going to go right after the top guy who he expects to be the leader of his rookie class. You know, the other thing is, after that practice when he was out gassed and he was out of shape and they couldn't do, he went and spent another 20 to 30 minutes along with Hollywood Higgins, Jordan Payton, Ricardo Lewis, and Cody Kessler running routes, just working on everything after practice was over. So this is, it's just funny to me when I'm seeing people be like, bust, he's a bust already, because he's, please, pump the brakes.
And I think Hugh Jackson's comments soon thereafter that he made about Corey Coleman and being out of shape, as Hugh has said, you know, props to the guys that are here, the current Cleveland Browns, you know, that have been partaking, you know, here in the, you know, the workout sessions with the new strength and conditioning staff, as well as the coaches. They're busting their butts, and Hugh Jackson sees them, and that's football shape. That's NFL football shape. And here it is, you have a college football player who doesn't know essentially what it takes to be in professional football shape because he's never been a pro before. Now he understands where he has to go.
And you know what? He took the comments. It was like, and I liked what he said back. He's like, yeah, I can get better. I'm going to get in better shape. That's what I'm here to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, I mean, it'd be another story that if he were out of shape and dropping the ball out of shape and balls were whizzing over his head as an undersized wide receiver, then you'd go, is he really going to fit here? He's dropping balls already. He's running the wrong routes. You know, Kessler's, you know, throwing it over his head. He's a little guy. Those aren't happening.
Right.
It's just something. It's the compound effect. He was probably in better shape on Saturday than he was on Friday, simply because of getting those reps under his belt.
Absolutely. Getting them under his belt. And the weekend has come and gone. The rookie minicamp, 3 days, and a lot of highlights coming out of it. And I know that you and I got to take in some of it and see it all. But Gibbs, I wanted to ask you, as somebody who was there Saturday for FanFest, what you thought of that and what you kind of thought overall of what you've seen so far from this rookie class. I got to see it. I was there. I saw it, and I loved it.
You know what?
I got to see it.
I think the same thing Gibbs just said.
Yeah. Speechless.
All right.
It was impressive.
Sorry.
Oh, hey, there he is. The man, the myth, the legend.
What I think of rookie minicamp?
And Fan Fest and just the weekend in general.
Fan Fest was actually really – I like the way they did things. I thought the roundtables were cool and the rooms. I went to the Betonio cooking class with Rocco, and then Hanford and Ernest Biner were celebrity bartending. It was pretty sweet, man. I mean, you want to talk about, you know, some opportunities that you wouldn't get otherwise. Guys just signing for anybody. I mean, the players were gracious with their time. There was a lot going on. And as I, you know, as Dino and I talked about during our show on Saturday, you know, a lot of, okay, the weather wasn't conducive, but it wasn't like you were in the rain. But that practice was brutally cold, man.
Yes.
I mean, if for guys that aren't from the Northeast or never, that might have been the coldest some of those guys have ever played in.
Yeah, we have a lot of guys from you know, Texas, from the Big 12 coming out. It was, and yeah, certainly was something.
It was brutal, man. The weather conditions weren't great, but I thought it was a good weekend. I get what Hugh said when he talked about the players and the whole game shape. You know, there's difference between shape and game shape. And he said it himself. He goes, you know, the veterans had 2 to 3 weeks of our off-season conditioning program before they took the field. He goes, these guys haven't even had one off-season conditioning program yet. We literally just threw them out on the field. Let's see what they can do. That's what he did.
That's what he did.
So,
and I think they responded very well, actually.
And I think Corey Coleman responded well. Hey, look, I get it. I understand. It's hard to work out consistently when I'm going to hotel. And when I'm really – I'm doing exercises, which, again, goes back to the validity of the combine – the guy's telling us, I have to practice running a 40. I have to practice, you know, my high jump. And I have to practice things that maybe have no bearing whatsoever on what he's going to do in the National Football League. And he came out and owned it. And he said the right things. They all did the right things. I don't know if I agree totally with Coach on Kessler in the wind the other day, but I think that's a guy – that really comes across as someone that can adapt. That, okay, I'm going to get smacked in the face the first time, but it's not going to happen again. And I think it takes a while for your body to adjust and the way you throw the football. I think it takes a little time to adjust to throwing in the elements like that. And the elements were in full effect on Saturday.
Yes, they were. And it was good to see a good indoctrination right there. What's going on with, you know, you're coming to Cleveland. This is what you're going to need to be able to perform in and produce in throughout the season. And they got that very early. I didn't particularly need the snow, if I'm going to be perfectly honest about it. I get it.
I loaded in on Saturday. Dino and I were at the stadium at 7:30, and it was raining sideways and about 38 degrees. And I'm like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah, wild, right?
Unacceptable. We're never going to golf again. It's just I don't even know.
I came home to my backyard, and you know, we've already made the trip to Petites, and I put the petunias in the ground. Now we're like, it's glowing. You know, my wife's happy. That's all that matters. We've mulched, and I come home from FanFest, and there are bags, like garbage bags, on top of our plants, and I'm like, what the heck happened back there? She's like, oh, I called your mother. They're all going to freeze. They're all going to die. I'm like, what? What is? It's May 15th, May 14th. What's going on?
I wasn't covering anything. I brought the hanging baskets
what's
in
the deal,
and
bro?
Put them in the garage.
Well, they're in the ground, Gibbs. I can't uproot them.
Yeah. So
I tried to create the best greenhouse effect I could with the bag over the top.
Yeah, you're like, stay warm in there. Stay warm in there.
Yeah, I had to turn the heat on last night. It was unacceptable to me.
Yeah, ridiculous. I broke out. Ridiculous. Unacceptable, Cleveland. Let's go. Maybe it was just kind of like
today.
The sky crying after Believeland, which was a frosty, frosty show as well. For people that watched it, we can talk about it. I don't really think we need to spend much time on it. We've all lived it, or most of it. I've lived it at least recently, not the whole entire time, but I'm familiar with it all. When we come back, though, we'll take phone calls, 216-578-0850. Want to know what we saw from rookie minicamp? We'll answer that. At 1:30, Bill Bender from the Sporting News, national college football writer, who wrote a good article today about the importance of Corey Coleman this season, for the Cleveland Browns. He'll be our guest at 1:30. At 2 o'clock, we'll hear Hugh Jackson's meeting with the media after minicamp practice. 2:30 after for the review weekend edition. And, of course, your calls and your tweets. Plus, we've got sound that we're going to get to throughout the week with these rookies from their media availability. We've got all that for you and much, much more here on CBD's The Girl Wilhelm Gibbs.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to CBD's The Girl Wilhelm with you here from the Dog Bowl in Berea. Jason Gibbs on the board as always. 216-578-0850. We'll talk a little about the rookies. I can tell you the couple things that stood out to me at this rookie minicamp were, number one, Ogba looks like an absolute monster.
Yeah, for sure.
Big, strong, insanely fast around the edge. Just a natural athlete. He looks like he would want an early pick to look.
And I know that there were, when the media was given their first exposure, I think it was Friday morning, to have some time with the rookies offensively and defensively, there were a lot of questions to Ogba about, you know, dropping. How often did you drop? Drop, 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 drop. And everybody wants to overanalyze his usage. You have a weapon that can get to the passer. That is what he will be doing, okay?
Yeah.
Let him, the same way Kessler might be the guy next year or 18, and, you know, the future of the wide receiver position is Corey Coleman getting into shape and playing at a high level. Can he just focus on what he's, can we just have our guy be satisfied with the guys that we drafted doing what they were drafted to do? Ogba was not drafted to drop. To go back to 2014.
Yes.
And I think you and I did it at the end of the year. Paul Kruger, I want to say, rushed the passer 93% of his reps. For all you people who are cynical, that's a tell. Hey, I'm coming. Stop me.
Stop me.
Right? Paul Kruger's rushing. Let Ray Horton get creative with the other athletes we have on defense to create, you know, to, we know Kruger's rushing. What else are they going to do? Or what else are they not doing? That's what keeps them guessing in a 3-4 defense.
Well, right. And when you're looking at, you know, a guy like Khalil Mack, are you worried about what Khalil Mack does when he drops?
Hope he doesn't get in that window when I try to throw that curl.
Right. Or are you
worried
about
saying?
Right. Are you worried about him getting to the quarterback? And that's what you should be doing. So I'm not worried about Aldon Smith when he was playing very well, obviously. Talk to me about getting to the quarterback. Get to the quarterback. And the pass rushing percentage for these guys, Elvis Dumervil, Aldon Smith, 93%. They get to the quarterback. That's what they do. You're not worried about what else they can do.
Yes, you mix
it up. As you said, if you're rushing 90% of the time, it means 10 out of every 100 passing plays you're dropping. You're just throwing a wrinkle in there. That's fine. Get to the quarterback. That's why Ogba's here. That's exactly what I want to see.
And it was good. What I liked listening to Ogba speak, he was talking my language, but I think some of it fell through the cracks for some of, you know, some writers, I'll say, is because he's like, when you rush to the quarterback, there's sometimes a peel call that can be called. It's defensive scheme, right? And what happens was, if the back steps inside, you know, an inside backer, whoever has him in man-to-man coverage, picks him up. If that back were to quick swing,
okay,
Ogba, who's rushing the quarterback, sees that flash, peels off his rush, takes him in coverage, okay? That's not a rush. You know, that's him on the way to the passer. Checking out of it and peeling on a running back. Okay, he talked about doing that at Oklahoma State. I get a peel call, had to peel on the guy. So the wheels are turning when it comes to his responsibility, and that's what I like to hear. It's not so much, you know, are you going to be what Kruger did in 14, or are you going to be what Kruger did in 15? You know, because there's a significant production and there's a significant drop off. The kid's going to line up with his ear, you know, pin his ears back and rush the passer. Now, I think where Kruger fits into that, because we saw 11 sacks and we saw, what, 3.5?
Yep.
When his role changed. What was Orchard really drafted to do? You know, as a second-round pick, what, 18.5 sacks
at
Utah?
Get to the quarterback.
Get to the quarterback. But what role will he have? You know, is he going to be a little bit more of a dropper? Because he's a lighter guy, a little bit more athletic, grew into that scheme last year. You know, got some sacks late in the season, but he was in that Mingo-ish kind of role at the Sam linebacker in this defense.
And the question becomes, are we going to be a team that's going to try to bring five a lot? Or are you going to try to disguise some things with an athletic, you know, five technique dropping back every now and then? Probably not. You're using these guys in the nickel, and you're hopefully, ideally, I think when you're in the nickel, you're going to want Ogba on one side and Nassib on the other. Eventually, those are going to be your guys, and then maybe you can get into a formation where you've got Nassib and Orchard and Ogba all on the field together to go get after the quarterback. Sure. But you're right. It will be interesting. Last year, and again, last year doesn't really have much of a bearing. Last year, Nate Orchard dropped 36% of the time. I don't think that's what they want from Nate Orchard either.
No.
At the end of the day in this defense. So we'll see how it ultimately ends up playing out. The other thing that really stood out to me was Hollywood Higgins is just silky smooth. And we'll see what it is when the pads come on. But right now he looks very, very polished and very much ready to contribute at wide receiver for this
team. I think, you know, prior to the pads coming on, what's going to be evident to me as we have an opportunity to watch some of practice throughout the OTAs and the vet minicamp is, I would say his ability to get off a press or win in one-on-one coverage, even without pads. Because a corner, whether you have pads, Joe Hayden doesn't stab with his pads. He stabs with his hands.
Sure.
You know, and he has great feet. And his ability to make up, even if he misses, to close that gap and make the play on the football with the ball in the air on guys. We've seen that from Joe Hayden. We saw it against Julio Jones in Atlanta in 2014 when he had the pick. So his ability to get, you know, in those situations is recognizing press, man, off coverage, whatever it is, and winning off of that physicality. Because I think Tremont and his experience, he's taking a young rookie to school. If the rookie can win versus a vet, you know, the speed and everything is different, but if he can get off that press is really what I want to see.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see that when the OTAs begin. Higgins did have the biggest play of the rookie minicamp, a 50-yarder over Trey Caldwell, where he showed his ability to get vertical and make that leaping contested catch. Let's go to Reg in Youngstown now. Reg, 216-578-0850. What's up, Reg?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. Good, man.
Good, man.
Hey, I just wanted to say, man, that was one of the reasons why I called. A couple things right quick was I was just going to ask you guys, I'm glad you brought it up, about our guy Coleman. I think he's going to be fine, like you guys said. He just got to get in football, in professional football shape.
Yeah, in Cleveland Brown shape, yep.
Yeah, that's it. That's what it is right there in general and stuff. But, guys, you know, something else I wanted to ask you all, since you all seen him, how was it far as the line was looking, man? That's what I really... You know, I mean, I know that you couldn't see a whole lot as far as the offensive line without pads on, but how was their footwork and stuff with the drills and different things? How's it look to you guys, you know, in general and stuff like that?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, it didn't stand out as a negative to me in any way, shape, or form. You saw Spencer Drango getting some reps at right tackle where he actually looked very good and very comfortable.
May compete there.
And that's where they said he will be competing to start things out. So he looked good. This is a guy who didn't allow a sack on a Baylor team that was throwing the ball all over the yard in the Big 12 last year. So an impressive guy. He's excited about the opportunity, but the line to me, again, nothing stood out from a negative standpoint. There were a few times Ogba was able to get around the edge. He had one where he batted down a pass from Cody Kessler. I know people wanted about Scooby Wright. Had a nice interception of Kessler at the FanFest practice on Saturday. He looked good. But really, what I'm excited to see is now getting the proper context and scale. It was easy to see Ogba stand out in this rookie minicamp. It was easy to see Coleman stand out. I thought Higgins stood out. Can they continue to stand out when they're mixed in with the veterans? And that's what we're going to start to see beginning tomorrow.
I agree. And I think that I believe that those Coleman and Ogba will continue to stand out as long as they grasp what the coaches is peeping into their ear in regards to coverages and recognition and so on and so forth. Because the one thing that we have to understand is the first thing that you learn is what I do. What am I asked to do on this play? This is actually a learning progression. Is what do I learn on this play? Like, if I'm Coleman, what's my route? If I'm Ogba, what's my technique? What's my responsibility? What is my job?
Yep.
Okay, that's step one. And these guys, because of the amount of information we'll be getting, will be swimming in just knowing what they do. Where you really find the guys that contribute is, A, they have the talent. They're grasping the information of what they do. The next step is what are we doing? Okay. If I line Coleman up at a different position, if I take him from the Z and put him at X, does he know what he's doing over there too? You know, why am I running this route, and what route is Barnage running below me to drag that linebacker out of that window so that I can fit that dig or that curl at 12 yards that Coach Saunders wants precisely run. There's a why to what they're doing.
Sure.
What am I doing? What are we doing, and why are we doing it? And then you get into part three, which is what is the defense doing and the recognition of what are they doing? Is that why is that safety at 9 yards? What's their tendency when the safety's at 9 yards? What does Tremont Williams like to do when he's off? What are they predominantly in? When they're in press man, is he in press bail or is it press man? I don't know. It's what am I doing? What are we doing? What are they doing? That's the learning progression of a rookie. So these guys, for a portion of time, are just trying to get lined up properly and run their route or do their job as fast as they can.
Yes, and that's what we're going to see, how they can do that and then acclimate against the guys who've been doing it as professionals for years. All right, we're going to go to the Ohio Business Machines Hotline in a moment. Joining us soon will be Bill Bender, who wrote a very good article about the importance of Corey Coleman to this football team and the expectations for him. And basically, here's the headline. Browns need Corey Coleman to be great from the first snap to even have a chance. He certainly wants Coleman to come in and play a big role for this team and how important that will be for this passing game. And I thought it was interesting also coming out of the weekend that it's, you know, RG3, they're not handing it to him, but I think if reading between the lines, it seems that this is RG3's opportunity to be the starter, as we all expected that it would be, and that Cody Kessler will be brought along at his pace, and we're going to see, you know, I think you'll be pleased with what you see from Cody Kessler when he is out there. Smart guy, takes coaching well, but this is RG3, Robert Griffin III's opportunity to come in and show what he can do once again in the National Football League. Do we have Bill Gibbs? I believe we are efforting him at this moment. We're going to have Bill Bender again, as I said, from the Sporting News. And he is with us now on the Ohio Business Machines Hotline. Bill, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
So you wrote an article today, and the headline's simple. Browns need Corey Coleman to be great from the first snap to even have a chance. Talk a little bit about what you mean with that statement.
Well, obviously, I mean, they need a number one receiver. I mean, you guys know that. I don't have to tell you that. And I think he comes in from Baylor with the big numbers, and he took a lot of questions about the route tree and everything just because there's this misconception that he's just a vertical receiver. I think he can be much more than that, and you know, that's what Cleveland needs, obviously, right away, is somebody that can step in and be a number one.
Do you immediately see him, you know, based around the vets that are on the existing roster, that Corey Coleman can almost be penciled in, if not, you know, using permanent marker as a starter for the Cleveland Browns?
I would think so. I mean, obviously, there's some things going on with Josh Gordon that haven't been determined yet. When Brian Hartline and Taylor Gabriel are your two returning receivers that led the team in catches last season, you need somebody to come in and catch the ball. And I think he'll play a lot. I think he'll start. I don't know. I'm not saying he's going to be like a 1,300, 1,400-yard receiver right off the bat, but I think there's a chance that he could lead the Browns in receiving yards next season, and they'll need him to do that.
They will. Talk with Bill Bender from Sporting News. Bill, not only did the Browns add Corey Coleman, as you talked about the receiver room needing a lot of help, they drafted Ricardo Lewis out of Auburn, Jordan Payton out of UCLA, and Hollywood Higgins out of Colorado State. What do you think of the other three receivers that the Browns added in this draft?
Oh, they're all, you know, solid players. I mean, obviously, I do a lot of college football for Sporting News. I really liked Higgins.
Me too.
You know, I watched enough of him. I mean, he was an All-American candidate. He can really play, and I think he's another guy that's going to step in and fight for time. Payton, you know, there's development there, but he played with a good quarterback at UCLA, and he made some plays too. Same with Lewis playing in the SEC. So, again, I think this was an emphasis for the Browns, fairly obvious, that they brought in all these receivers, and there'll be a couple more, and that was certainly a team need, a glaring team need from last season.
What's your take on Hugh Jackson essentially saying, trust me on Cody Kessler and the fact that they took him where they did and passed on a few of the other guys that many had ranked ahead of Cody Kessler?
I mean, look, I'm from Ohio, too. I'm from Central Ohio, so I just kind of, like, assume that maybe the Browns would go after a Cardale Jones or a Connor Cook, who's a close-to-home kid. So when they took Kessler, it opened my eyes a little bit. And then as I looked at that completion percentage, and Cody Kessler talked about that at minicamp, it's really good in college. So maybe that's part of that trust. And you heard Jackson and Kessler talking about how much they liked each other with a team meeting. And you know what? I don't think Kessler will start right away, but I think he's a guy, you give him some time to develop behind Robert Griffin III, and he could be a player someday.
Certainly, that is the hope there. And you talked about RG3. What do you think about his chances to get his career back on track here in Cleveland with Hugh Jackson?
You know, there's a game I go back to, and it wasn't last season. It was the year before, late in the season, when they played Philadelphia, and he got in there, and I was joking around with a Redskins fan at work, and I was like, they're going to go out and beat Philly and knock them out of the playoffs. And that's what they did, and he really played well. It was kind of that show that I still have it type thing, and that's what he's going to have to do. Obviously, you know, those receivers are going to have to develop quickly. They're going to have to establish a running game. You need all of those things and protection. But, you know, I think RG3 comes in, maybe surprises. I'm not saying, like, out-of-this-world Pro Bowl numbers, but I think he can be a solid, dependable starter for Cleveland.
Bill, I know you were also in town covering the minicamp, but also for the Believeland premiere. What's, again, first thing off your tongue in regards to the Believeland, what's your take?
It was awesome. I mean, you know, my wife is from the Cleveland area. Her grandpa's a 91-year-old guy who's gone through that drought like everybody else. And, you know, it was just an emotional thing. I thought the best part, personally, was Ernest Biner recalling the fumble, the emotion he showed. You know, I don't think he has to feel sorry for anything, but, you know, just that, how much it really meant to him, a guy that later got a Super Bowl ring, I believe, with Washington. So he's a guy that, you know, that's just all these heartbreaks come in. But another thing, and you guys can probably speak to this better than me, I think the national perception of Cleveland as this woe-is-me town is not all that correct. I think it's more of a case where, yeah, they know all these heartbreaks happen, but they have some of the most devoted fans in the country.
Yeah, the fans here, and that's why when the Browns do turn it around, it'll be one of the great stories in all of sports, because I don't think you'll be able to match what the Browns fans will be like when they get a winner here in Cleveland. Bill, when you talk about being here Friday and the rookie minicamp, was there anybody else that really stood out to you? We've talked some about the offensive guys, but anybody else that kind of really jumped out at you?
Well, the defense, you know, I kind of looked at it, again, looking at it from a college standpoint. When you got guys like Nassib, Ogba, Schobert, and Scooby Wright, those are all guys that pulled in some hardware. And Carl Nassib spoke about, you know, we were four of the best pass rushers in college last season. Now they know that doesn't mean much now, but I think that adds a little bit of depth to Cleveland's defense. I know Nassib's a player, watching a lot of Big Ten football, and so is Schobert. So it'll be interesting to see how those two fit in, if they can develop into rotation players as rookies.
What did you think of Ogba at Oklahoma State?
Well, he's huge. I didn't realize until I saw him up close how big he really is. You know, a player the year before, he was lineman of the year. He can get after the pass or the quarterback, and that's something they're going to need, obviously. And you know, he seems like a well-grounded person. It's something that Carl Nassib said. It's something that Hugh Jackson said, and it's something that's fairly obvious. They went after character guys in this draft, and I don't think there's one character risk among those 14 draft picks that they had.
Bill, as you mentioned the 14 draft picks, that should put any veteran, you know, kind of on watch that things are absolutely changing here in Cleveland. Are there any vets, as you look at the Cleveland Browns roster, that may be in question, A, because of age, B, because of price?
Well, I mean, you know, everybody's going to have a training camp battle. I think that's what Hugh Jackson said, because that was kind of when I looked at it on the surface, I'm like, tie to college, it was like they bring in a huge recruiting class. Well, some guys are going to have to get cut. So I'm looking forward to the training camp battles with Cleveland and as they build depth with this roster. Obviously, as I pointed out in the article, there's a long way to go. They're going to take lumps. And you're in a division with Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, and Baltimore, who are all, you know, none of those teams took a step back this season. So it's still an uphill battle for Cleveland. But the point I was trying to make is there's nothing wrong with being a little optimistic, especially with Hugh Jackson as head coach.
Yeah, and that's kind of the thing, and changing the culture, and that's what we keep hearing so much about and what he's bringing to bear with this class that he can kind of mold along with his coaching staff. And when you look at the coaching staff, and we talked about the receivers and Corey Coleman, can he develop? I think one of the big keys to the Browns going in on four young receivers, taking one as early as they did with Coleman, is Al Saunders, who, you know, many think is the best wide receiver coach in the NFL, who has history, you know, from The Greatest Show on Turf, Andre Rison. He's coached many very successful receivers in the National Football League. How important is Al Saunders and what he can bring to this team going to be for the development of these receivers, and Coleman in particular?
Well, after talking to Coleman, and I haven't done this yet, but I kind of want to go back and look at some of that Greatest Show on Turf film, which I will, of Holt and Bruce, because yep. The comparison kind of stuck with me then, because it was like, oh yeah, Isaac Bruce and Torrey Holt, those guys were really good, and they kind of same frame, same body type, same kind of game, and maybe Coleman can develop. If Coleman develops into that, Browns fans are really going to love him. And like you said with Saunders, so much experience doing what he's done, and that's going to help with that young group. Because, again, and I can harp on it as much, I mean, last season, covering the Browns, I think I covered four or five games. What stood out is they didn't have receivers that could stretch the field.
Right.
You can rip on the quarterback all you want, but if you don't have receivers that can create separation, it's not going to matter.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Bill, most analysts still believe we have the worst roster in all of football as we sit right now. But I think with the youth movement, guided by Hugh Jackson, steps are going to be taken in 2016 that many people at this point right now can't see until the season starts. What type of tangible growth do you think we could see out of this team?
Well, I think, look back to Hugh Jackson, the 1 year he had at Oakland, and that was probably a team that a lot of people thought had the worst roster in the NFL that season, too, and they grinded out 8 wins. I thought, you know, if you watch the Raiders that year, it was a fantastic season. So if the Browns got to 8-8 in year one, that would be huge because because then they could build on that and try to become a playoff team. But speaking to the roster, I mean, you can't really say that now. Let's wait and see till how they look in the August and especially early in the season.
One team, obviously, that's also on the mind of Browns fans is the Philadelphia Eagles, given that the Browns will have their number one pick next year as a result of the trade from 2 to 8. What did you think of what the Eagles were able to do in this draft, and how do you think they're looking for 2016?
Well, obviously we'll see if Carson Wentz plays. They've got a new coach, new system, and that's kind of that makes week one very interesting for both teams. And I know we always put so much stock and overstock in week one, but that's a game Cleveland could steal. Well, again, we'll have to see what Philadelphia looks like with the changes, and they've got a quarterback mess with Bradford as well right now. So interesting. That should be an interesting game. And just speak like when they made that trade. And I'm trying not to be a homer about it, but I was like, Cleveland got the better end of that. But we'll see if Carson Wentz becomes some Pro Bowl type quarterback. Maybe I'll be wrong.
Yeah, and as you said, time will tell with that one. When you were looking at these quarterbacks coming out this year, it seems that for the Browns, it was Jared Goff, and then there was a big kind of drop off until they wanted to go get their guy, which was Cody Kessler. But clearly, they didn't feel about Carson Wentz like the Eagles did. What was your take on those quarterbacks?
Well, I wasn't in love with either one of the quarterbacks that went 1 and 2 because I kind of, and again, this might be a little bit of Big Ten bias, but I really liked Connor Cook. I knew he slid down the board, but I looked at his body of work in college as a guy that, did all those things with Michigan State. They beat Ohio State a few times, and he was a big reason why. Maybe not last year, but the first time, and just a winner. And that's kind of one of the guys I looked at. With Kessler, I see a kid that, he had a good record. He played for 4 different coaches at USC. So it's kind of hard to break him down. But if I just saw more value in the later round quarterbacks, even Cardale Jones is a project over Goff and Wentz, Wentz, we'll see. I didn't watch enough FCS. But Jared Goff was a guy that I was kind of like lukewarm on. Again, I could be very, very wrong, but that was just me. I wasn't in love with either one of the top two.
All right, as we go along here, talking, of course, with Bill Bender from Sporting News. Bill, when you look at this team and you talked about the goals for it, what do you think is a realistic scenario? And as a Browns fan, what would you be hoping to see here from a very young roster in the first year under Hugh Jackson? What would be a successful season in your mind for the Browns?
Again, 8-8. If they got to 8, that would be, and I'm a Browns fan, I'm probably really, really happy. I know everybody expects, when you're 0-0, you expect to be in the playoffs and do all those things. And again, see growth within the division, because that's what sticks out most since Cleveland came back, is just getting kind of dominated by Baltimore, Cincinnati, and Pittsburgh. The numbers show that. And if they could make some headway within the division, maybe steal a couple division games and get to 8 wins and keep it gives Hugh Jackson time. You can't just fire coaches after 1-2 years. Give Hugh Jackson some time. Let this system play out. Let him develop these young guys, and you might have something.
Bill, last one for me, and we know you got to run, is as you look at our division and you talked about the expectations of the Cleveland Browns, which I think, would be well ahead of many Browns fans' expectations at this point right now. But what team in our division do you expect the Ravens to rebound, and do you just expect maybe the Bengals because of losing Hugh Jackson, losing Sanu and Marvin Jones and some of the other players they did via free agency, that there may be a little bit of drop off there in Cincy?
Maybe, but that's still a playoff-caliber team. I think the frustration in Cincinnati is completely different than Cleveland. They've been to the playoffs this many times. Now they got to go out and win a couple games because they drafted well again. They continue to draft well. I think Pittsburgh is going to be very good if they stay healthy. They have the best quarterback, running back, receiver combination in the league between Roethlisberger, Bell, and Antonio Brown. And Baltimore, it's an interesting year for them. Obviously, injuries played a role in that, but again, if you're a Cleveland fan, it's just tough to – it's got to be the toughest division in the NFL just because those are three teams that will all compete in the AFC. And, you know, but if I had to pick one to win it off the top of my head, I'd probably go with Pittsburgh as an early preseason pick, barring injuries.
Bill, thanks so much for the time. Thanks for being with us. Sporting News, National College Football writer. Good article, and I'll tweet that out for everybody on the importance of Corey Coleman this season for the Browns. Thanks for all your thoughts on this team as we get excited to see these guys go to work when OTAs begin tomorrow.
Absolutely. Let's hopefully we can talk again in the preseason. I appreciate it.
Yeah, we certainly will. Thanks, Bill. All right, why don't we come back, we'll open up the phone lines again, 216-578-0850, and then at 2 o'clock, the top of the show, we will hear from Hugh Jackson, the head coach of the Cleveland Browns. That's coming up here on CBD.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Oh, welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Jason Gibbs, Matt Wilhelm. I like Bill Bender was fired up. 8-8, I feel like, is a little aggressive. Bill Bender saying he wanted to thank us for having him on to talk Browns. Said, if I sounded nervous, I knew my family was listening. No worries, Bill. I thought Bill did a very good job there. An Ohio guy. We'll have to have him on more, Gibbs. I feel like this was a good discovery for us.
He was great. He, you know, I saw him on Friday, and he was definitely, you could tell, you know, Sporting News sent him there to do something because he was very deliberate about which guys he was going to. So, great guest, and the guy knows a ton about college football, especially, you know, good guest going into the season about those rookies, and I would say good guest next offseason as we get ready for the draft, too.
Yeah, he's going to be a nice resource for us here on CBD. 216-578-0850. Again, 216-578-0850. By the way, our guy G.I. George pointed out to me, he said, it was so good to hear from Reg again. He said Reg was ready to turn in his dog tags after last year, so it's good to see him back in. I didn't know Reg was that much on the fence that much.
Hopefully the dog tags are gone.
Hopefully they are. That's right. Let's go. Let's go. The career coach says, how has Gilbert looked this offseason? He was a dog at his first camp as a rookie. Not sure what's happened since. Gilbert's been running with Joe Hayden out, has been running with the ones in the mini camp that was open to the media. And everything I've heard on him is positive. It's one of those situations where when he's flying under the radar, that's considered good news. That there isn't they're folks talking about as a football player, not any of the other stuff.
Yeah,
or a sleeper.
And
right.
sleeping, or it's practices like he did up in Buffalo, you know, after that first, whatever, Thursday, whatever it was. And everybody was talking about the Browns were out physicaled. It was either the Browns were out physicaled or Justin Gilbert got burnt consistently by everybody. And the Bills didn't even have their like top wide receivers or flip flop. When your name's not called, it's either called out because you're above and beyond exceptional, or you're called out because you're a doormat.
Right.
You know, so at this point right now, to not have his name come up is a good thing.
One guy who I got to run into at FanFest and talk to was one of my, you know, personal favorites, Pierre Desir. And he said he is so much more comfortable in this defense compared to a year ago. And I want to get your opinion on what he meant by this. He said he's going to get to play more off man. He basically said, I'm playing what I played at Linwood, where I had my most success, more off man. And he said, our cover three this year is actually going to be a true cover three. Last year's cover three was actually much more man than it was a cover three.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what he said, off man, unless you are, again, the Joe Haydens, the Patrick Petersons of the world, where you thrive in man press, or everyone wants to play off man. It gives you a cushion. You can read the release. You know, it allows you to slow pedal, you know, from depth.
And as a bigger guy, it puts you in better positions.
Absolutely.
To break up passes.
Absolutely.
You can play
because
more trail.
For a guy like Pierre Desir, who, and again, I don't know what 40 he ran, who may not have the high-end makeup speed, but for a guy like Pierre Desir, he has it in length. You know, if you whiff at the line of scrimmage in man press, it's chase mode.
Yep.
You know, and we see that happen to Joe Hayden from time to time. When he misses or nicks a guy instead of getting a solid jam on him, Joe Hayden is scrambling. Your footwork goes out the window. You're scrambling to match a vertical. You're scrambling to match, you know, an out route. You know, you run by a guy because you just feel like you're in chase mode. And then lastly, cover three is, to me, if I were a coach on the youth level, is the first defense I would put in. And the reason why Cover 3 is so great and it's so easy is, and I've showed you, you can draw boxes on a football field or on a whiteboard or chalkboard and understand, A, why you call it Cover 3. Cover 3 is three guys deep. What's Cover 4? Take a guess. Four guys deep, you know. What's Cover 6?
What's Cover 2?
What, Cover 2? Two guys deep. You know, Tampa 2 is obviously the third guy running through based on the release. So, but for them to match Cover 3 in man-to-man, and I was going to say what we always used to call it, used to bastardize coverage. You know, so Cover 3 is a bastardized version, which means, like, we're changing it to how we want to do it. And what it does is you're just creating more layers of recall for the players to learn it. And also, you're creating more layers of communication because, you know, a safety sees a certain split or a player lined up in a certain position has to communicate, we're going to play that bastardized version of Cover 3, which means we're going to play that man version. So it has to go from Tremont to, at this point, to Poyer to Campbell to Hayden. And everyone's got to be on the same page. Whereas if you just get really good at playing it the way it's supposed to be played,
like,
and you'll have small little nuances in it,
sure,
you know, that will change things up. But you get really, really good. That's your base defense. That's our go-to. And there are so many things you can do or so many wrinkles you have because it's very easy to teach fire zones, zone pressures, because Cover 3, it's still three deep. You're now taking one of those underneath boxes, which there's four in Cover 3, and you're now having three guys. There's the hole player. There, and then there's your curl
hot hole.
Your hot hole. Yeah, I was going to say it because I know it's your favorite.
I do,
but there's your hole player. There's your curl flat players. And the responsibilities are slightly different because you're missing a guy because you're adding him into the rush. So there's a progression of how these things should be taught. And I would imagine that things are going to be so much more simpler.
Yeah, and I think that they like that. And when you can master that, everybody, we talk about all the time, and I'm not in any way, shape, or form comparing what the Browns are doing on defense to the Seattle Seahawks, but people talk about how good the Seahawks are at playing that Cover 3. And a guy like Brandon Browner, who was very successful in that Seattle defense, if you were asking him to go play press man as they did a few times, and if you want to know what I mean, go look at Carolina against New Orleans last year when he tried to play press man on Ted Ginn and literally got left in the dust. It helps to have those big physical guys when you're playing that kind of a Cover 3.
Does.
You don't need the speedsters.
And to go back to my point, I think it was in the first segment, was just talking about Ogbah. He was drafted to rush the passer. Okay, when you're playing Seattle, you know what you're going to get 70% of the time. Richard Sherman's always going to be on your right, playing left corner for that defense. Someone's going to be out. So you build your game plan to attack what they do. So that when you get really good at it, you don't care. We're just more efficient at what we do, and we have more playmakers making plays, doing their job, and technically there's no weaknesses. There's no chink in the armor, per se.
Yep.
If you're getting really good at what you do, playing it over and over and over again.
And that's, you know, get those reps, get the repetition, get it locked in. 216-578-0850, or you can tweet the show at Nathan Zagura, at Matt Wilhelm 35, of course, at Browns_daily. And this secondary, this cornerback, we talked about it on Dog Pound Report. This cornerback room is going to be so full of guys that I think it is going to be one of the more fascinating competitions to see who ultimately makes this team at that position. Because, you know, you would say right now Tremont Williams is totally safe. Is Tremont Williams totally safe on this team given his age and given his cost? Given the youth out there, and we'll look at it. Here are the corners you got. Jamar Taylor, who's now in his fourth year out of Boise State. You grab him in a trade, was a former second round pick. You've got, as we talked about, Joe Hayden, Tremont Williams. Those are your starters. Kaywan Williams, undrafted free agent 2 years ago, was a darling of the Mike Pettine, Jim O'Neill, Ray Farmer era.
Sure.
Is he a darling? He's got a blank slate.
He was getting days off.
He's got a blank slate with this group. You've got Justin Gilbert, the former first-round pick, not of this regime. Pierre Desir, the former fourth-round pick, not of this regime. You've got Charles Gaines, who showed some serious flashes last year out of Louisville. And you've got Trey Caldwell, who you just invested a draft pick in this year's draft. We've got the guy who just made the team, Eric Patterson, who just got signed in. So there are so many, now nine with Patterson in there, cornerbacks that are going to be competing to make this team. And what are you going to have, five, maybe six?
Yes. And that to keep that conversation going is, you referenced Pierre Desir. We had the question about Justin Gilbert. If one or both of those guys emerge to a level that Hugh Jackson and Ray Horton see fit, Tremont Williams becomes expendable.
Absolutely.
You know,
not through any fault of his
because,
own.
No, no, no. Because of money, because of age, you're getting two players that can essentially accomplish what Tremont Williams can do, what he's bringing. So why keep him? You're locked in. You've got a guaranteed contract with Justin Gilbert and Pierre Desir, you know, other than maybe losing a little bit of confidence, as many probably did in that defense and in a long year, being put in situations that they weren't ideal for them or their skill set, has an opportunity, as you said in speaking to him, to kind of restart his career. All these guys do.
Yeah.
And that's what I really think if I were a linebacker on this football team, you know, in the middle of my career, it's a fresh start, blank slate. You talked about it with Justin Gilbert. You talked about it with Pierre Desir. If they truly embrace that and just go out and work and grasp this, and in Justin Gilbert's case, so what? I overslept, okay? That was with the pass guys. If I'm on time and I do my job and I'm accountable, these guys don't know me any different.
Right. That's what I show them.
And because I couldn't cover anybody and haven't played a whole lot, these guys know that. But if I prove that I'm understanding the system and making plays and doing my job and working on my technique on a daily basis, that becomes all these coaches know. And that's how they base their evaluations.
Absolutely. And you know, you're talking about Tremont. If Gilbert steps up to the point where he can start for this team or Pierre does, it's going to be tough to keep Tremont Williams around. Not because of anything he did wrong,
no.
But you look at this roster.
It happens. This is happening everywhere in the league.
What sticks out? 33 years of age. That's not on the team. Here are the oldest guys on the Browns right now. Josh McCown, 36. Andy Lee, 33, but plays a punter. Tremont Williams. Yeah, he can do that forever. 33. John Greco, 31. Joe Thomas, 31. Barnage, 30. We know he'll be here. Desmond Bryant, 30. Hawk, 30. Kruger, 30. Hartline, 29. Those guys are going to be cycled out, all of them, in the next couple of years.
And to be honest with you, some of that's going to start now.
Yep.
I hate to say it about any of those guys because they were good at points with Browns. As you know, with the Browns, they were good in their career enough to earn them the opportunity to come here via free agency. But at some point, it ain't going to be good enough. They're going to be too old, too expensive, and they're going to get production out of multiple young players and the opportunity to young players that this regime has to see.
Yeah, I mean, and you're right. You're absolutely right. If you're Tremont Williams, you have got to be so much better than Pierre and Gilbert.
Or two players, yeah.
Or Jamar Taylor.
Correct.
To stay here this year.
100%.
You're Kaywan Williams, while it's a different reason, but as an undrafted guy, he's going to have to be so much better than Trey Caldwell, who they invested the pick in this year. It's going to be this that cornerback room and watching the battles between those corners and these young wide receivers are going to be fascinating to me, and that's really what I'm going to have my eye on throughout the OTAs and really the whole offseason as we find out what exactly is going to happen and shake out in those two rooms. When we come back, we're going to hear from the head coach of the Hugh World Order, your Cleveland Browns, Hugh Jackson, as we kick off hour number two on this Monday edition of CBD.